News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Good morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5. 807 text line, or if you want to call 251-343-0106, we'll get some of these texts as we go along here today. There's a lot to get to, a lot of activity. Well, enough activity over the weekend, especially on Sunday between Iran and Israel to really tick Trump off. Also, Kristen Welker did enough to really tick Trump off, and he walked out of an right in the middle of an interview.
Meet the press. Yeah, he walked right on out. And she was talking about vote counts. And with the L.A. mayoral race kind of top of mind right now and the Save America Act continuing to fail up in D.C., remember the Senate, you had Lindsey Graham trying to tack on that amendment for that ICE and CBP bill that made it through the Senate last week and is set to work its way through the House today. Well, you know, even with a Republican majority House and Senate, they can't pass that election integrity law that Trump has tried to pass. And Trump is just he's had it. He's fed up with this. He keeps saying it over and over again. And then it's just watching these L.A. votes come in, even though it's a mayoral race, it's not a federal race. It just seems criminal the way that, you know, and maybe they're 100% accurately counting real votes, you know, one per voting person that votes in the LA mayoral. But when you watch these vote counts come in and, you know, how long ago was the election? Was it 2.5 weeks ago at this point or nearly three weeks ago?
Was that long ago?
Maybe it was nearly 2 weeks ago.
Maybe 2 weeks ago tomorrow.
That might be closer. But you had Bass, who advanced to the runoff fairly early. They called it for her. And then Spencer Pratt, who it's supposedly nonpartisan, but he's the Republican in this race, the quote-unquote Republican.
Independent is what he's...
Independent, yeah. But you have Bass, who she's looking for her second term, and I think it's fair to say on many levels she's been a disaster as the mayor of L.A.
Yeah, I would say completely over her head, and then the decisions not just over her head, but incompetent as well. I mean, over her head, like overwhelmed by things. The fire was incredible. People are still living in trailers. They're not back. There's been no restoration to those neighborhoods. It's how the heck is she getting reelected?
And then the massive amounts of fraud that have been going on under her watch. But her other opponent, other than Pratt, is more liberal, more progressive than even Bass is.
And she is.
That's this Nitya Ramen, who even Newsmax, multiple media organizations have called the race, and they say it's going to be Bass and Ramen in the runoff for the L.A. mayor.
I thought that Pratt was behind by like 4,000 votes, and Ramen was far behind that at one point, and that it was going to be, and Pratt was actually had overachieved in the election, and people were then saying, you know, come November, he may have a chance to win the whole thing. Now suddenly he's got no chance at anything.
No, he's on the outside looking in, and it doesn't look like he'll make it into the runoff. But, you know, I know voting wasn't always like that in California. Certainly over the last 10 to 15 years, it's become what it is today. Yeah. And I was kind of looking into that this weekend. They had the Voters Choice Act back in 2016. Now, mail-in voting had become more and more popular through the early 2000s and into the 2010s. Then you had this Voter Choice Act. Every voter is mailed a ballot. Traditional neighborhood polling places are replaced by vote centers, and voters get more drop-off and early voting options. That's been nearly a decade now since that law passed in California.
Okay.
So they mail everyone a ballot. And I know they're not the only city or state that does that. There's other places around the country that do the same.
Eight states in all that are primarily mail-in ballots.
And then, of course, once COVID hit, and so many used that to take advantage of the system and really, really amp up the mail-in ballot voting, now we're at the point where it takes, you know, they basically have a full month that they're waiting for these mail-in ballots to come in as they continue to count.
Yeah, you're thinking, what happened to Election Day? And a lot of people are saying that. What happened to Election Day? Mm-hmm. Like, it's a day, and it should be a day, and by the end of that day, we're close to knowing who won.
Yeah, and even, you know, some states that have a week that it takes them to count the votes, even they're looking at California like, what, you couldn't wrap this up in 6 days? But they can't. And then you look at, as the ballots come in, you know, there was one batch of votes that came in last week that 24,000 votes were counted, and Pratt received zero votes.
Makes no sense.
Just odds alone.
Yeah, makes no sense.
Would suppose that he would at least receive an accidental vote, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then some of the more recent counts that have come in these last couple of days from really, you know, blue districts in L.A., so whatever color is bluer than blue, they're liberal voters. And Rahman is getting votes, but the other Democrat in the race, the incumbent, isn't receiving the same or even anywhere close to the same number of votes. So there's just some really weird inconsistencies coming in, but you can't do anything about it.
So suddenly, with the votes that had been counted, Rahman is in bad shape. Suddenly, Baskets, no votes, or not, I don't want to say no.
Just a few, yeah.
She gets a smaller percentage of votes suddenly, and all the Democrat votes are coming in for Rahman, and that allows her and Bass to be in the runoff rather than Pratt and Bass. So no matter how we got to this spot, you have to say it looks suspicious. It almost looks like too suspicious, like too in our face, that it was orchestrated.
That's what it seems like, right?
It feels like, and it's almost like, well, there's no way they would be that brash to just do it this way and say, well, she's behind. We gotta go to Plan B here or whatever. And suddenly, now Pratt's on the outs with these latest votes being counted.
Well, and then you have, you know, the commentators, Democrats or quote unquote neutral commentators say, well, yeah, but there are so many more Democrats that use the mail-in voting than Republicans that, of course, there will be more votes coming in late on the Democrat than on the Republican. But
it sure is,
they're unable to explain why those numbers are so off kilter. And you're even at the point now where your Gavin Newsom's and some other liberal politicians have acknowledged that something needs to be done about how long it takes to claim winners in these races. But they're also trying to distance themselves from Trump, who keeps saying that this is a major issue and they need to get a handle on it.
Yeah, so there, as I recall, Newsom, we think we talked about this late last week too, Newsom was saying, he was admitting that there's something wrong with how long it takes, but he's not admitting in any way that there's anything nefarious going on here.
Exactly,
right?
Exactly.
And but so, it would appear by the, and you can say, well, you guys aren't, you're not typical Californian, or you're somebody that leans conservative. That can be true, but I would say that we're pretty much, I mean, we're looking, I'm trying to look at it through neutral eyes, not through any partisan eyes, and it just seems like there's something here to be looked at.
Yeah, that
examined,
to say the least.
Yeah.
So that interview that Trump stormed out of, pre-recorded interview with Meet the Press and Kristen Welker, and they were talking about just that, about voting, and specifically about California's elections. And she was talking about the 2020 race as well. So Trump pointed to California's mayoral race and the still unfinished ballot count as proof that there's a lot of weird stuff going on.
Yeah.
She said that's how they vote in California. And that's apparently when Trump said kind of enough is enough, and then accused the network of bias, cut the interview short. Let's see. Trump said it's happening again right now in California. This is happening right now. It's 4 days. The president was referring to the fact that several of those races remain too close to call. And after roughly 6.7 million ballots had been counted, only about 71% of the statewide expected vote had been in for the governor's race and then for the mayoral. Welker noted Republicans appeared to be performing strongly on election night, and she was referring there to Hilton, who led in the gubernatorial primary, and then Pratt, who was at the time in a good position for the mayoral runoff.
At the time.
Well, keep in mind, too, that Hilton was one of just a couple Republicans in that gubernatorial race, and you had a ton of Democrats. So all combined, Hilton with not a great chance to win the race for governor, but he did come out on top of that jungle primary just because the numbers there. Trump said as additional ballots have been counted, both races have tightened and suggested the results were being manipulated And that caused that back and forth where she said, "Hey, we've been out here waiting for you all day." And he said, "Yeah, I've been out here in the rain with you too." And they said, "I'm cutting it short. You just can't be truthful and can't be honest." And Scott Pelley with CBS and being let go from 60 Minutes.
Just dripping in self-importance, so, that guy. He's like Niles Crane on Frasier. He's just such a nerd and just so full of himself, basically. How dare you fire me?
Kind of like Will Ferrell in Anchorman, in a way, too. He's completely disconnected to the rest of the world.
Yes.
He did a New York Times interview. And, you know, this was after he was let go last week.
I noticed it's not a New York Post interview, but
no,
go ahead.
So the Times. And he was asked, why do you think the country thinks you're biased, like CBS News and 60 Minutes? He said, "Why do you think so? Do you have a poll? Is there market research? What are you talking about?" He said, "Because we certainly didn't believe that." So his people there, his anchors and journalists.
Wait a minute.
60 Minutes.
Everything says that no one's trusting the media.
Yeah,
Any kind of a poll, any kind of a questionnaire said no. That we don't, at way over 50%. So,
Within the halls of the 60 Minutes offices,
it didn't reach them.
Even if they didn't think they were biased, fact that they didn't know that much of the country thinks they are,
that's crazy.
Just shows you kind of the ignorance, the ignorant place he's coming from.
I'm amazed by that. You would think the guy knew he was pretty much disliked by a large portion of the country, and evidently he's saying, "I never knew that."
Yeah, and you know, ever since the new ownership,
did you read his mail?
The new ownership, Ellison came in, and then Barry Weiss to try to take them to a more neutral standpoint. Keep in mind, Barry Weiss is no Breitbart writer.
No,
she's a lesbian liberal who was turned off, and specifically by the New York Times, where I think she was the editor of the opinion pieces. Because she had different views than they did on free speech during the COVID years and things of that nature, she was too far right for the New York Times newsroom. But that doesn't mean she's right wing.
Right.
And they're acting like she's some, you know, Trump follower who's tearing the newsroom apart. But that's not what Barry Weiss is. And Pelley, who came out last week after some of the people were let go.
Yeah, he's ridiculous.
And bashed her, his boss.
Mm-hmm.
Now he's complaining in this interview. He said, "No executive at CBS News, our editor-in-chief, Barry Weiss, coming over to 60 Minutes to explain, to talk with us, to sit with us." He's basically saying none of them came to explain to him why he was being let go. He said, "That's a family at 60 Minutes. We've worked together for decades. We travel together. We go into literal combat together." He said, "My former
boss."
That's
where a lot of people had problems with him talking about being in combat.
There's that too, and pretending that their job is so much more important than everyone else's. It's just that complete disconnect between the media and the people they're writing for. They still don't get it after all these years.
That's amazing. That really is amazing that Pelley is that outspoken on a number of things, including, well, she needed to come over here and explain. She's your boss, man. She don't have to explain squat. And also that he had no idea that so much of the nation maybe doesn't dislike him, but just doesn't believe him. Well, and doesn't like him either. 8:21.
Turn up your voice on the text line. 251-343-0106. Now, back to Mobile Mornings.
Morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5 at 8:25. Your text at 251-343-0106. Rock and Roll Doctor says, "What is the voter participation rate in L.A. for the mayor's race?" 125%. Kind of like Fulton County in 2020. 110% there.
Yeah, so I looked it up. It's around 25% voter turnout, which isn't over 100, but I know exactly what you mean, Rock and Roll Doctor. And you know, we have our own election news that we're keeping up with, too.
Yeah.
Next week, I mean, a week from tomorrow, the primary runoffs and plenty of big races there, including the attorney's general race, like Todd Stacey was talking about in that clip Dan played last hour, but also that Senate race, which is, I think, the marquee matchup on next week's ballot. With Barry Moore and Jared Hudson. And we had that poll last week from the Alabama poll.
Yeah, and Jeff had that guy as a guest on his show. It's called the Alabama poll. he was talking from his office in Virginia. So make of that what you want.
Yeah, and in that poll, it was a bit surprising, but Hudson had a 9-point lead. Is that what it was?
Nine to ten. Yeah,
lead, and that was a bit of a surprise. Now another poll that came out shows Barry Moore actually leading by 9 points. So take with that information what you will. That runoff coming up next week, June 16th. And this survey, The Coefficient, surveyed 600 likely GOP runoff voters. And this poll has Moore at 46%, Hudson at 37%, and a pretty large number still undecided, 17%. And they said it's actually the Trump supporters in this poll that has Moore with the edge. 61% of Trump supporters back Moore compared to 26% for Hudson. But Hudson is pulling in the youth vote. His strongest support comes from voters 18 to 34 years old.
But will the youth actually turn out?
Will they turn out? What's the turnout going to look like at all? Next week?
But the most observers will say that more than likely the older voters will turn out as opposed to a greater percentage of the younger ones.
And now those two continued to snipe at each other over the weekend. And tonight at 6 in Montgomery, they have a debate, which I think 1819 News is hosting. Mm-hmm. So Jeff will be able to fill us in a little bit more on that. Jeff Poor, when his show comes up at 9 o'clock. But now it's turned to whether Barry Moore actually served in the Navy or not. Mm-hmm. As last week, I don't know who was asking the question, but they started to question whether Barry Moore was using stolen valor. And Hudson came in on his Twitter page and said, listen, I know how accusations go. Some of the most salacious and untrue stuff pops up. People claiming you didn't serve. But then, so he was kind of like backing Barry Moore in one aspect of it.
Seemed like he was going in that direction, then it kind of wiggled the other way.
But then he said, it's easy enough to prove that you served. He said, I was a Navy SEAL. Here are my papers. Mm-hmm. And then this weekend, Moore explicitly called on Barry Moore to show, using documentation, that he served in the Navy. So how that turns out tonight and whether they get into it on the stage or Barry Moore brings that paperwork that shows he did serve in the Navy, that's kind of the turn that this race has taken.
Where's the confusion? I mean, you either served in the military or you did not. For instance, I did not. Hmm. So where's the confusion? How are there not records to say he was in the Navy from this year to this year? Doesn't he have a son that served as well now?
I'm not sure.
I think he's got, that
sounds about
right. I think so. I think so.
But you're right. I mean, just show it.
Yeah.
And that kind of ties us into the other big election story here, and that's Tommy Tuberville.
Yeah.
And the residency question, which the GOP party in Alabama said they're going to take a closer look at, I believe, next week.
They're going to have the hearing, and so Lanyap just keeps on coming in and rattling the cage a little bit. There was a QR code that was available, was seen on these tax forms that were redacted, and they went and had, and they got axed when they
scanned the barcode.
They scanned it, and suddenly everything was there.
Yeah, so an own goal by the Tuberville campaign.
Yeah.
Lanyap has been on it more than any other news organization, and were reporting on the redacted tax returns, then found that the barcode unredacted those returns and had more reporting. And it seems like their biggest question, they say the biggest question in this hearing, will be the 2019 returns and the income reported federally compared to the state income reported by Tuberville. But Tuberville's campaign now issuing a cease and desist to the Lanyap, saying, hey, you can't run that story with that information. That should have been protected.
That happened over the weekend, right?
Happened over the weekend.
830 FM Talk 106.5 Mobile Mornings with Dan and Dalton and you. 251-343-0106.
Mobile Bay starts its day with Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig on Mobile Mornings.
835 FM Talk 106.5 Mobile Mornings on a Monday. Coming to the text line, 251-343-0106 in just a minute. First, we head over to McConnell Automotive and talk with Louie Arata. Hey, Louie.
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you?
Hey, we're doing great. And a little stretch of dry weather in the forecast for us here. That's fine. We've been going through a lot of rain here recently. And no better way to ride around Mobile and Baldwin counties than in a new ride from McConnell Automotive. And you guys have some great deals on trucks and an incredible inventory right now.
That's right. I mean, inventory is incredible. I mean, check everything out online at McConnellAutomotive.com. Don't forget, we just got another 15-passenger van in. Also got a couple of work vans, 3/4 ton on the used car side. We got plenty of those. We got plenty of Yukons, plenty of SUVs. So like I said, check everything out online at McConnellAutomotive.com. Don't forget half-ton Sierras. We got 0%. I mean, it's just, it's going on over here on Dolphin Street. So come by and see us.
Yeah, and it's that easy. And you guys care so much about the customer. You really make it a great experience every single time. We appreciate your time this morning, Louie.
Hey, thank y'all. Come see us.
That's Louie Raddick. Go see him. You'll find him at McConnell Automotive on Dolphin Street, just east of I-65, and the website, McConnellAutomotive.com.
C.B. Carl on the text line says, all Moore needs to do is bring out his
DD-214.
DD-214, what's the holdup? I'll be one of the young people voting for Hudson.
Yeah, C.B. Carl.
He's a young guy now.
One of the young guys voting for Hudson. Buddy says, regarding the Tuberville story and Lanyap, said Lanyap has overstepped their bounds and should be held accountable. The end of Lanyap is near. Now, Scott Johnson, who's the reporter who's been diving in on the Tuberville residency question and then tax returns, he did note in his story Friday, after figuring out that scanning that barcode gives you all this unredacted information regarding the tax returns, he did say that they weren't going to publish much of the stuff that was unredacted because he said it gave too much information on Tuberville and his family life. But keep in mind, too, that being a sitting member of the U.S. Senate, there's already a lot of Tuberville's financial information that is out there to be parsed through. That's kind of the deal. Now, it's not as transparent as I'd like for all of the members of Congress, but there is a lot of financial information already out there about Tuberville, and it's widely known that, you know, his coaching days are behind him. He didn't really have another day job unless you consider some of the media he was working with between his coaching days and becoming a U.S. senator. But most of his income comes from the market, the stock market, and real estate. And there's no doubt that Florida has laws that bring you a lot more return than Alabama does as far as the capital gains tax and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. So financially, it makes a lot of sense for Tuberville and a lot of these well-off people. And so many of the senators and sitting congressmen we have are well-off, even if they didn't start their terms as well-off as they are now. But Florida is much, much more friendly to those kinds of returns. So you could see why financially he would do a lot of the things he's doing. But I still think, and once we get through this GOP hearing next week, I still think Tuberville is going to be governor. And I really don't think that a lot of the voting public is as wrapped up in this as the media seems to think they are. And we'll get Doug Jones lawsuits. That'll be the next stage once he enters the general election race between himself and Doug Jones yet again. This will be a big storyline that follows us all the way through. But I still just don't think the voting public cares as much. That doesn't mean that it's not Lanyap's job to dive in on these things, though. I mean, that's what reporters and journalists are supposed to do. It just seems that Lanyap has a bone to pick with Tuberville, and they'll tell you, well, that's because, you know, he's the most popular political figure right now. So, of course, if we dive in on these questions about his residency and tax returns, people are going to think we're gunning for him.
Yeah. Who is, well, there's just so little left there in terms of investigative reporting out there, really in the state. AL.com has not really jumped on this, or are they just reporting what Lanyap's reporting?
They're reporting what Lanyap's reporting.
So
yeah.
They're not sending any of their top guns in there. They're just stating a fact of here's what's already been reported. But you would think that AL.com would have an interest in stirring this up a little bit too.
Yeah, and they have been reporting on it, and I know Kyle Whitmire took the Lanyap story and wrote an opinion piece on it late last week regarding those tax returns. But, yeah, Tuberville's camp now issuing a cease and desist to Lanyap for writing about that barcode. Butterknife texts in, says, our new Republican Party has destroyed freedom of the press. It's an embarrassment who we vote for today, he said, and continued, the voting Republican in Alabama doesn't care as long as you've not been convicted of molesting a child. Who cares what your past is? Jason says, good morning, guys. What are y'all's take on the statement from Faith Academy that stands with the guilty counselor and makes zero mention of the true victim in the situation. They attempted to keep this in-house and cover this up, like many other problems that go on at that school, but this one got away from them. He's referencing the statement Faith Academy put out Friday after the guidance counselor was indicted for failing to report.
And they're standing by her.
Faith Academy on Friday said they're standing by her, yeah. And then Jason texts, again, too bad our left-leaning friends at Lanyap weren't this interested in the residency of Shamari Figures. And several others of you regarding the Barrymore-Jared Hudson story saying, like Leo, referencing the military service, it's really simple. It's all on your DD-214 paper after your discharge. No DD-214, no military service. And Charles in Irvington also saying DD-214 tells all.
Yep. So let's get a look at that. And there's that. And maybe that happens tonight at that debate. And so will it be streaming? Is it going
the debate? That's a great question. I need to know the facts on that. I believe 1819 is playing a pretty big role in that debate tonight at 6 o'clock.
Okay.
We'll figure it out and let you know.
Okay. It's the kind of thing that we'd want to have some of those clips in the morning.
Definitely.
Sure, right?
Definitely.
So New York City, a lot of interesting things going on there right now. First of all, you have a socialist mayor, and he was on MS Now over the weekend on a show called The Weekend on MS Now. That's what it's called. But anyway, the interviewer was saying to him, do you have any pointers for other Democrat mayors out there who...
On, like, dealing with Trump?
Dealing with
or
Trump.
What?
Yeah. Like, seems like you've got the touch dealing with Trump. And this is what Mamdani said about his relationship with Donald Trump. He really only had, like, one meeting, I think, at the White House. But here's Mamdani on that.
I have an advantage in that we are both from New York City.
Mm-hmm.
And we share a love of the city amidst many disagreements that we have, whether about the country or about the city. And one thing that the president said to me, as well as to the public, is the better the city does, the happier he is. And in that, I ensure that our conversations are focused on how we can do better for the city. And that doesn't mean shying away from disagreement. You know, I've sat directly with the president and I've spoken to him about the fact that I believe that ICE raids are cruel and inhumane. I believe they do nothing to serve the interests of public safety. It just means being honest and ensuring that it isn't a conversation around personality or the two people who are there, but rather around the people of New York City and how we can deliver for them.
Yeah, they were also referencing what was going on across the river in New Jersey at the Delaney Center. And then he went on to say this about ICE.
This is partially why I have put forward a vision alongside so many others to say that ICE should be abolished, that there is no way to reform this kind of cruelty that we're seeing endemic in the way that immigration is being enforced across the country. When it comes to our city, we are proud of our sanctuary city policies. We are proud of the policies we've put forward and also the executive orders we've put forward to ensure that every single agency is complying with those policies.
No one ever talks about the act of allowing all these people into the United States in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
Estimates between 12 and 20 million. Why aren't we ever, the left never addresses that. Democrats never address that. It's almost like the LA thing. It's like right under your nose, something maybe nefarious going on. And it's like, it's almost too obvious, right? Well, in the case of that 12 to 20 million, that was the open borders under Biden. That's the disaster that ICE is attempting to clean up now.
Yeah, and you mentioned the Delaney Hall thing across the river there in New Jersey. Did you see Homan this weekend? He was on Fox News and kind of trying to put to rest that whole discussion about how awful the conditions are at Delaney Hall. I mean, you laid it out last week, the story about the Signal chats and how many people from outside of New Jersey
were
coming
in. It's all orchestrated. It's orchestrated with big money
yeah.
and all these groups that are just trying to tear things apart.
And you have locals there that are saying, listen, what are you complaining about? The prisons are worse than the immigrant detention facility.
Yeah, Rikers Island
or whatever.
My brother's in the can.
Yeah.
I feel bad for him.
Not the illegal immigrants.
No, so, there's no way there would be a groundswell real. There's no way.
But Homan, and a big part of this conversation has been about the food that they serve the illegal immigrant detainees there at Delaney Hall. Homan said he actually went to Delaney Hall on Saturday and sat in the cafeteria to eat the same meal as detainees. And he said it was such a,
He said it was such a filling meal that he didn't even finish his dessert, was what he had to say.
He actually took his wife to dinner there Saturday night.
He said
night.
Spaghetti with meat sauce, vegetable rolls, and dessert. Quote, I'm not a small guy. I couldn't finish it off. Wow. So I don't know if Homan's on the old Ozempic or what, but he said he couldn't finish his meal at Delaney Hall. I don't think that's going to tone down the protests.
No, I guess not. So, it's nuts.
But you mentioned Mamdani, and he'll be at Madison Square Garden tonight. So will President Trump for Game 3 of the NBA Finals. The Knicks are up 2-0 and going back to New York, Madison Square Garden. So they've said that the watch party that was set for outside of the venue, they put an end to that. I think that's too much of a security risk. So they're going to have that watch party elsewhere in the city.
I doubt if you toss Mamdani a basketball, he could dribble it. He's not Mayor Pistol Pete or like a Harlem Globetrotter. No, he probably has no idea what to do with the ball.
I would love to see that.
It would bounce away into traffic.
Probably. But so you can imagine the security. And already getting into any professional game, security is quite high. But with the president being there, and then to a lesser degree, the mayor of New York City. So the Secret Service, of course, is securing arrangements for Trump. Mamdani will be guarded by his police department detail. And then on Sunday, you have the UFC on the White House lawn on Trump's birthday coming up this Sunday. That's why I think this is a big week. I think he wanted to probably bring the Iran war to an end before this blockbuster weekend.
I think you're right. That was kind of the whole plan, was to have the deal in place, and then you could kind of celebrate with the with the
World Cup,
with the fight, with the World Cup, with the fight, and then you could begin, you know, in Trump's in the campaigner's eyes, you could start to build the case for Republicans in the fall not to get swept out.
So while the Iran war looks to be again on a pretty tenuous path, he's got a couple events this week that I think security detail, and we've talked about the failings of Secret Service, it has to be at an absolute premium, not only tonight, but Sunday, and that'll be on White House grounds, which I guess makes it a little easier, but still outside. So regarding tonight's game, Matt McCool, who's the top U.S. Secret Service agent in New York, he's overseeing security for Trump's attendance and said that Secret Service would coordinate closely with the police department. He said there would be a number of road closures for the president's arrival, plus throngs of agents and police officers at the game. Garbage trucks will block off streets to discourage people from driving to the garden. This is going to be a pretty pressure-packed situation tonight.
They're deploying garbage trucks
to
security.
To block roadways to keep people from gathering.
Huh.
And said the president and the mayor will come to watch a hometown team. I'm hoping that everything stays as safe as possible. I can't imagine being that Secret Serviceman McCool in charge of the detail tonight, especially off the heels of this Butler County news that we were reporting on earlier in the show.
Crazy.
Matthew Crooks.
Right.
Thomas Matthew Crooks.
And so we've got people in the audience that can relate to this, because if you are listening right now and you happen to be at that, wasn't it the Georgia-Alabama game a couple of seasons ago?
Yeah, I think so.
That game in Tuscaloosa.
Yeah, Tuberville and Britt in the same suite. Right?
And Trump there, right? I knew going into that. I don't remember reports after it. I remember going into that weekend where people were concerned about. Yeah, I mean, fans were like, oh, now it's going to be a big.
Getting in through security is going to be insane.
On the text line, if you happen to be there that night, how did it affect you? Were you affected by that? And you think, well, New York City's much bigger than
Tuscaloosa.
But the point is, Madison Square Garden is much smaller than Bryant-Denny Stadium. So the 100,000 as opposed to the 20,000 that'll be at the game tonight. What was your experience? I'm just curious about that. If you were there that night, and if you're a season ticket holder, certainly you can compare and contrast it to the many other games you've been up there. Was it a hassle?
I'm sure it was. For Secret Service tonight, I'm sure having an indoor venue helps in a lot of ways.
Yep.
Not having to worry so much about outside threats.
Yep.
But you're still talking about a ton of people all in a very passionate environment altogether.
Yeah, it will be. You know, Trump there or not, that's the New York fans have been waiting on this a long 1999 maybe? Long time to get them back into the finals, and it looks like they're going to win it. It's 8:50.
Turn up your voice on the text line, 251-343-0106. Now, back to Mobile Mornings.
On the text line, Chris Inuimo says, hey guys, I was an Army reservist from 90 to 98. The Army does not issue DD-214s for me, but they did issue SF-180 with all of my military service records. I worked for the VA until my retirement, on and on. And he says, my point is, all reservists don't necessarily receive a DD-214.
Yeah, so I guess unless you served under active duty conditions, then as a reservist, you don't receive the full DD-214, except for periods of your service when you were serving on the battlefield. I don't know if so. I was looking up Barry Moore's military service and joined the Alabama Army National Guard and Reserves late 80s, early 90s.
Okay.
I don't know, I was thinking Navy, but it says he was called into active duty once in 1989 for approximately 2 months of training. So, yeah, I don't know if he has the DD-214 or not, but that's some great information there. Thank you, Chris, in West Mobile. And I mentioned that story that Judicial Watch posted this weekend, and they have since – now, this is about the Butler County assassination attempt on Trump's life 2 summers ago.
Yeah, the story was that an email conversation was had between an officer in that county and
the suspect, Crooks. Yeah, and now they have – Judicial Watch has completely deleted any instances of that story that they published off of their websites. That pretty spectacular claims. Like Dan said, that a sheriff's deputy had been emailing with Crooks before the assassination attempt, and that and a SWAT officer found a device on Crooks' body with push buttons and an antenna along with a cell phone. And they also said that a medic who pronounced Crooks dead at the scene was told she had to evacuate the roof because a canine was alerting on the building below, and that his body remained on the roof. So they were basically saying there's still a ton of crazy questions about this shooting that haven't been answered. The FBI, though, this weekend came out on X and slammed Judicial Watch. They said this is a clickbait lie by Judicial Watch, which is now nothing more than the fake news media. The unredacted documents are interviews of Thomas Crooks by college instructors, not cops, wherein those instructors referenced to having emailed Thomas Crooks about coursework and said maybe if you spent more time on facts instead of clicks, you wouldn't be a laughingstock. And Judicial Watch, right after that FBI rapid response post, took everything off about that story.
So no explanation? No,
none of that.
Okay.
That is a big miss on Judicial Watch's part.
How accurate are they generally in your view?
I'm not sure. I haven't been keeping strikes and balls on them.
Yeah.
But they are a conservative political group, conservative right. action group of sorts there. So the FBI, though, absolutely taking it to them. Roger says, that's a bunch of BS. Everybody in modern times, I'm sure it's a DD-214. Everybody gets a DD-214. So he's saying that Barry Moore should have one. Coming up on the Jeff Poor Show, he has a great list of guests. Shane Stringer, state representative, on in hour number one. Dale Jackson with WVNN joins just after 10:30. And former state senator Dick Brubaker on just after 11:30 this morning.
All right. That debate between Hudson and Moore tonight, 18:19 news, is part of all of that. Hopefully we'll have some of that audio in the morning with Dan and Dalton. Mobile Morning starting at 6 a.m. tomorrow.
By the way, Rob Holbert on with Sean today at 12:30 on Midday Mobile.